Hi, it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. And I'm Dr. Lisa. How are you doing? Oh my God. What is I feel like I'm in this I feel like we're all living in this like crazy movie or something, and it just keeps getting crazier and crazier. And I feel like somehow this is a climax thing where, you know, where they have the big scene where with, you know, where the big confrontation and the big fight scene. And then after that, you know, there's it resolves. But who the fuck knows? Anyway, you know, this is a rough time for all of you. And I just want you to know I'm here. It's rough for me, too. I had a meltdown on Monday. OK, I was like, you know what I do? I go like, what my life is meaningless and I'm hopeless. I'm not kidding. And my life is pretty good and I've got nothing to complain about, but I had a meltdown. And I think, if you have a meltdown, go for it. You know, it's actually really better to just own the depression or anxiety or whatever it is, know it's normal and just know it will pass, because it will pass. And if it doesn't, you can actually, I was going to tell you about the service in New York City that's free, any of the five boroughs, 888-NYC-WELL, or you can text 65173 to WELL. And you can always get in touch with me. As you know, I'm not licensed, but I've been doing this for a long time, and I do offer support, drlisa@radiofreebrooklyn.org. Anytime. And speaking of Radio Free Brooklyn, thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. We are the best radio station in the Western Hemisphere, because I've checked all of the stations, and that's really, we are the best in this hemisphere. I don't know about the other hemisphere, because a lot of those languages I don't really know. But you know what else? Before we get started, because I've got this really, really interesting woman on today. I hope I say her name right. Maria Elena. Logsdon. Yeah. And she's a really interesting person, great actress, accomplished. She's done a lot of stuff, and she's had like a lot of crazy shit in her growing up, I just found. But so stick, let me just tell you about our city running tours, and then we'll get to her, okay? These aren't our city running tours. This is a company called City Running Tours that this is a really good mental health thing. I'm going to tell you about it, okay? So do you like running, or do you like touring the city? Do you like meeting people? Do you like being outdoors? You don't have to be a great runner, but this is really, really healthy mentally, physically, all that stuff to do. And so City Running Tours offers neighborhood running tours as a way to discover the history of New York neighborhoods while you're running. Why on a run? And there's 23 different tours in five different boroughs, everywhere around the New York City area. They're offered 7 days a week, Manhattan, Brooklyn, Bronx, Queens. And there's, you know, schedule, you can book the tour, find out more information at cityrunningtours, that's plural, .com/New York City. All written out, City Running Tours. You know how to spell running, you idiot, don't you? I'm not going to spell that for you. Jesus. And you know what? You should go to radiofreebrooklyn.com and download our app, because you can have Radio Free Brooklyn 24/7, and we're a really great community radio station. We have everything that you could imagine, and you can listen to what you already know you love, and then find new things, including music, politics, comedy, talk. And Dr. Lisa is here every Thursday, 2 to 3. And you can also find over 250 episodes on the archive if you go to my page on RadioFreeBrooklyn.com. I think I said RadioFreeBrooklyn.com enough. Hi, Mara. I have it in my, I have a mental block about your name, how to pronounce the right accent.
It's all the time.
Okay. Okay. Say it again. I want to get it right. If you're going to be in therapy with me, we're going to be, I have to get it right.
I say Maria Elena.
Maria Elena. Okay. Let me just.
Maria Elena.
Maria Elena. Maria Elena. Maria Elena. Maria Elena. So, so anyway, guys, this is Maria Elena's, you know, first session with, you know, her first session with Dr. Lisa. She came into therapy today. We're going to find out why in a minute, but just let me give you a little bit of background quickly because we did the intake, a brief intake. You can find out more about the acting that Maria Elena has done on her IMBD page, which is Mariela Logsdon, Logsdon. Maria Elena grew up in New York City. She's an actress. You've probably seen her on TV, whether you know it or not. She she's done, you know, movies as well, but mostly television. She went to LaGuardia High School. Her mother was an executive nurse. Her father was a doctor. Like I said, she grew up in New York. I think I said that. I'm just going to say her father died suddenly when she was 9. She has a half brother and sister that she hasn't met. She's got a lot. There's a lot. There's even more. But you know what? I'm not going to just come out and say it. Let's see what's going on with her. But anyway, Marilyn is also married. She's been in stable relationships her adult life, which I think is pretty admirable for someone who's an attractive actress with a difficult background. It shows a lot of stability. I applaud that. Thanks for coming in today. What brings you into therapy?
Hi, well, thank you so much. I love therapy. Honestly, I think it's just a really amazing tool, not just for arty types, but just for everybody to understand themselves better. And
So you're in therapy yourself right now, right? You've been in therapy on and off since you were 9?
Yes.
So how did you get started in therapy?
Well, I think I know I had ADD from a very young age. I was always very easily distracted, but like typical kind of ADD kid, except without the like jumping up and down part, just very dreamy, I guess. I didn't want to be in school. I was just like, get me the fuck out of here. My parents were just, maybe it was like a requirement of one of the schools I went to. I don't know, but I was just in therapy and I just was like, oh, okay, I have to go and talk to this lady once a week, whatever. And as I grew up, I realized what a good thing it is or can be for, you know, and I've just always really been like an advocate for it. I always tell people.
So it's helped you a lot. It's helped you a lot. And you're in therapy now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how long have you been with this particular therapist?
We actually just started together during the whole pandemic and stuff. It had taken me a while to find a therapist that I really, it wasn't just talk. It was also about like some sort of healing or action. You know, I don't want to just talk about my problems or whatever. I need like somebody to say, the reason why this happens is, you know, just.
Yeah,
like,
you want to get some understanding and some growth. I applaud that. Mm-hmm. It's hard to find a good therapist. I'm here to tell you myself. So what, this is why I'm doing this. I think a lot of it's a joke, frankly, including what I do. But so was it hard to find a good therapist? Did you try a lot or how did you find your therapist?
It was hard at first because when I first was looking for a new therapist, I kind of outgrown one. And
what do you mean by outgrown?
I've seen a specific therapist because she had written a book I liked, and I'd seen that she
it was what was the book? Can you tell us?
Yeah, it was called Makeup Don't Break Up. I was going through a breakup at the time, and I was just like, do I want to save this relationship? Just like, what is going on? And I read this book, and I saw that she, Bonnie Eaker Weil, she has a practice in New York. So I emailed her, and we started working together. And she really did help me a lot. And then when the person and I had broken up, we just got to a point where I was like, oh, okay, I think like.
So she helped you get through a breakup and then you thought, well, yes. I want to move on to other things.
And she really helped me see my worth and my value.
Ah, and the guy didn't?
I guess. And it all kind of led me to kind of continue to boil things down into like, well, why? Why? You know, I just saw these patterns in my that I was like, hold on, I've been here before. And I read a lot of books at the time. I think my now husband and I were just like moving or something. It was just the money was really tight. I couldn't see her anymore. So I was just looking for somebody who was less expensive. And I found this wonderful woman, but she was, it wasn't like not a good fit, but it was more about like the talking and less about like the action,
right.
I guess.
Right, right.
Yeah. So it took me a while and I read this great book called Running on Empty by John L. Webb. Yeah, about like childhood emotional neglect. And that was like a big, like, so that's been my big focus, I guess. Cause before I was, you know, I guess everything just like sinks in when it's ready. So I wasn't ready to like receive that kind of information.
Right, right. So you feel like you've had some neglect as a child?
Yeah. And it's funny cause, you know, it's like insidious. It makes me very uncomfortable to talk about because I'm still like, oh no, my parents did a great job and I love them.
Really?
Yeah. Like no one. What?
Why do you feel? I just want to tell everybody, by the way, like I had this question in during the intake because her mother was an executive nurse and her father was a doctor. And Marilena, you know, so I said, you know, were they around a lot? And, you know, as you said, you had a lot of nanny housekeeper people taking care of you because your parents were working all the time, right?
Yeah.
Is that part of the neglect that is that baked in there with the neglect? Cause...
Oh, definitely. It's very hard because, you know, it's also like you tell, you know, everybody will say, well, they, you know, they're at the hospital. You know, you just kind of learn. It's hard. Well, yeah, like they have more important things to deal with at the moment.
Yeah, you know? It's not It's conflicting, right? Because what they're doing is they're great people. They're saving lives and helping people in very difficult places. You know, that is a heroic job, for sure.
It is also, it's a very tricky thing because it's like, oh, you know, and somebody will always come for you and being like, well, they, you know, they did the best. It's like, there's so much caught up with it and somebody's always going to take their side and it's just so complicated.
Right,
and it's uncomfortable for a lot of people.
Right.
So that was one reason why I had to find a certain therapist to talk about this because, you know, you talk about it with certain friends or family members and everybody has an emotional response to it because they could be a parent and they get offended because they go, oh, well, what if this is me? You know, you can't.
People project onto you their own insecurities. Yes. Like I'm neglecting my children. 100%. My children are mad at me, blah, 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 blah. It's very complicated. Yeah. What are your feelings about having children? Have you thought about it?
I think from a very early age, I knew I didn't want to have children. There was something in me that I was like, I don't show up as my best self sometimes with kids, or that's how it was like, or it's grown because now I'm like, I don't think I liked being a kid very much. I didn't like people talking down to me. I didn't like people being like, oh, you're just a kid, I'd be like, ew, fuck you. Like, I just didn't like it. And I think it's just such a big deal. It's such a big responsibility. And the fact that just the offshoot that I could be a bad mom is just too much for me.
It's a lot of responsibility. It's a lot of pressure there. So,
it's just too much.
So a lot of, so it sounds like you got through the breakup and everything was, you know, you did a lot. I'm sure you did a lot of hard work and you had some good help and, you know, you went out and found books and took charge and all that, which is great. But, so is some of the stuff that you're unpacking now about, childhood neglect?
Yeah. A lot of that. And it's also, again, it's difficult to talk about because, you know, I think it seems like it's more of a discussion now. I always say, like, when I was a kid, it was like before kids were people, you know, they were just like little annoying weirdos that you just have to deal with, you know, or something. Whereas younger generations even are like so smart and so canny and emotional and health and just being kind is such an important, is such a big deal for them that I really applaud it. And I'm just like, oh, I love it so much, but I do not think that there was enough of that.
Were you bullied as a kid by other kids?
No, actually I feel like I was bullied by teachers. like, school was so traumatic for me, especially because I think I had undiagnosed ADD. So I just like hated being there. And I was like, oh, and also I have dyscalculia. So this was like before that was kind of even like an option. So it was just like so much pressure. To
calculus?
Be good at
math?
No, I have like dyslexia for numbers.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Is that name calculus? What does that mean? Is that a
dyscalculia or dyscalculia?
Oh, dyscalculia. Like that? Oh, that's a condition I haven't heard of yet.
Yeah, it's like I have like dyslexia for numbers.
Oh, I learned something today. Thank you. Okay. I see what you're saying. So, did your parents put pressure on you to do well in school?
Oh yeah, incredible pressure. There was a lot of pressure. I went to good schools, and so did a lot of my friends. And I like to say that we were like trophy babies. We were like, just you have to be, you know, so good at everything that you do. There was and there was a lot of competition between us kids. Like, you know, all of our parents were competing. It was just like. Fraught.
Do you feel like your parents sort of like their self-esteem was tied up with your self-esteem, like your performance? Oh, their self-esteem was tied up with your performance.
I feel like so much of it was tied up because I try to understand their choices and the things that they did or didn't do and go like, why, you know, why would they, these like really smart, quote unquote, the thing is, they were smart intellectually or they were very good at their jobs, but I think emotionally they were very, very, very unintelligent. And they just didn't really have, they didn't want to or they didn't need to develop that part of themselves. Also maybe going into medicine where so much of that is you have to put that aside.
Right, exactly. I was thinking that. Yeah.
So when I was growing up, I remember hearing how needy I was, needy and emotional.
Oh, your parents would say that to you?
Yeah, well, my mom would say that to me. I mean, like as a teenager and stuff, oh, you're so the, and I was, you know, that was just very hard for me because I hate saying this because it sounds so fruity, but like I'm an artist, I'm a sensitive person.
But why do you even need it? But why, you know, when you say that, I'm just going to say this. It sounds like you're trying, but by saying artist, it sounds like you're trying to legitimize your need for emotional connection with your parents. And I'm saying mm-hmm. that I don't think that's fair to you. I think that's just normal. Being an artist, to me, being an artist doesn't, it sounds like I'm protective of you in that it feels like you need to have a reason, and you don't. You don't need any reason. You're a child that needs their parents.
Yeah. It's so funny because, like, I hear that and I say that to myself, but then there's still this part, it's old part of me mm-hmm. that like all of the, you know, all of my aunts, uncles, cousins, she's working so hard, you know, give her a break. You know, there wasn't really any room for.
So who do you hear, like, who's the person or people or force, who's the voice that says, you know, you're too demanding or too needy? Who's that voice? Who's saying that to you?
Oh, it's my mother.
Your mother?
My mother.
Was mm-hmm. she around? Like, how much was she home?
Not a lot growing up.
I mean, you had nannies. You know, you were taken care of. Okay.
I was taken care of. Yeah, no, she...
So what was the routine? Was she there in the morning? Who picked you up at? Did you have dinner with her at night?
Sometimes. Most of the time, it's so hard to remember.
Could you count on having her at a recital? You're an actress. Could you have her at, you went to LaGuardia. Would she come to all your performances?
I think that the ones that parents were allowed to, I think she went. It was very difficult because she always worked really far away. That was another thing. We lived in Manhattan and she was running a hospital in Brooklyn.
Running a hospital.
Mm-hmm, yeah, she became the COO
of Chief Operating Officer of a hospital.
I believe. One of the COC, whatever, one of those. She was one of those.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Oh, so was she kind of a workaholic?
Yes, definitely.
Oh, okay. So that's really, I mean, to me, that's really what we're talking about because to me, being a workaholic is an addiction. It's an addiction that gets a lot of positive reinforcement from society. Mm-hmm. But it's really an addiction just like every other addiction, you know, where people can't really control it. And there's a lot of mental machinations to tell yourself it's a good thing. And... Mm-hmm. You know, you're always getting so much positive feedback, and it's just really great for somebody's self-esteem. And I can see, you know, it's impressive that your mother did that. Don't you think so too, right?
Oh my God, yeah. It was also a huge part of why I looked up to her, because, like, she, you know, people worked for her, you know what I mean? Like, all of the moms I knew, you know, nothing against them, but, like, they all worked for someone, and she was the boss. That was, like, super cool to see. And it was also, like, yeah, really understandable why she couldn't be X, Y, and Z, because, you know, like, I got it even at a young age, but I guess, you know, and one of the things that I'm working on now is, like, even though you get it intellectually and you will get it, I guess, like, your heart or your soul or whatever doesn't, like, fully get it, I guess.
Well, I think on an emotional level, like on an intellectual level, and also on a, you know, pride, proud, you know, I'm sure, but on an emotional level, on a very visceral, primitive human level, you're not getting your needs met by your primary caregiver. And there's, you know, you can't, there's no way to rationalize that or talk about that.
Yeah.
Unmet need. That's always sadly going to be unmet. Right. So I think it's more about fixing. It's more about compensating and coping skills than fixing it, like owning it. It's okay. You see it for what it is, I think. There's one thing I'm thinking about though, that I'm curious about. So you said your mom died when you were nine. I mean, your dad, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Dad died when you were nine, right?
Mm-hmm.
So did that change your mother's attitude towards her job? Like, where was her job? How did your mother change after your father died? How was that managed?
I don't really remember. I think maybe she became a little bit more hands-on. I was so young and, you know.
How old were you? Oh, you were nine. And she was, well, nine. Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. So I have more memories of us spending time together one-on-one than before. I think, you know, and also I was like getting older. So we would do the things that we would do together. Were like everything Saturday and Sunday we would like get a manicure and pedicure together and, you know, go shopping and stuff like that. Yeah. That was like our routine. And, yeah. So I think it's honestly hard to say, cause I was so young. I don't really remember.
Mm-hmm. Also, you know, it's difficult, and that may be part of,
yeah,
you know, why it's hard to bring that back. But also, yeah, you know, I mean, your father was around till you were nine. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel his presence when you talk about him. And that may be, you know, because it's difficult. But I also wonder if he was nurturing or present as, you know, when you were very young.
I think when he was, my mom very much gave him, you know, all of the time with me as possible. Because he was also a workaholic, and he also had, you know,
he was a doctor.
You know. Yeah, yeah. So he didn't really have that much time with me to spend. So when he did, it was a lot of like quality time. Like, he was very big into reading, so he taught me how to read, and we would do a lot of things together, like little day trips and.
Just you and like him?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think my mom was with, but, you know, we would have a lot. I think I remember a lot of like one-on-one time. I think
making the most of the time that we had.
Yeah.
That's probably so helpful with your relationships with men and stuff like that. That's really great to hear.
Yeah.
Glad to hear.
Yeah.
That.
He was very, I think my mom was like, you were the grand experiment. He wanted to do everything right with you. Mm-hmm. You know, so that was like the, you know,
that's a great thing. That sounds so positive. Mm. So do you think that, you know, your mom, I mean, I guess what I'm wondering is if your mom, I mean, what your mom went through, what you all went through is extremely difficult, but I wonder if your mom, threw herself into work and avoided her, you know, her home life because of,
oh, probably.
Do you remember her being different before and after?
I was probably too young to remember, you know, a different.
Yeah. So you don't really.
Yeah. I think, you know, she was, I remember her more after. When I think back on like memories that stick out, it was with a lot of people, like a lot more people, you know, we were doing like family things or I was with cousins or grandmother or whatever, a lot more one-on-one time after he died.
So it sounds like she just really wasn't available, but also not that available emotionally to anybody.
No. I think that was a big thing for her. She, as I get older and I remember like comments she would say or things that, you know, I think she had a lot of anxiety, I think. That was always a big trait of hers, her anxiousness, like people would make fun of it, you know. So I wonder, it all seems to kind of like blend together that she was so anxious about work and all of these huge responsibilities that she had, and she didn't really have a lot of help, you know, after my dad died, and maybe even while he was alive, I don't know how much emotional help she asked for even, you know, and so it just, when I think about it, I feel, you know, it's just like a lot of like desperate control, you know?
Mm-hmm. She wasn't
just by her nature, being a nurse and all, that she was good at keeping her feelings in check when she had to. So did she seem like she didn't have a whole lot of emotional consciousness of in general?
No, she was a very deep feeling person. I just remember the anxiety. It would just be like, oh my God, oh my God. You know, like sort of that feeling. Well, it would depend. If it was like a, you know, thing, it was very like, okay, here's what we're going to do.
But, right. Great in emergencies.
But, yes. Yeah. But like, I have a couple of memories of just like the anxiety being like, and I would always have to be, and I, you know, it would just be like, oh my God, everybody calm down, you know, like one things. So, yeah, it's hard to say.
Mm-hmm. You know, I just want to ask you, it sounds like you're talking about your mom in the past. Is she around? Do you have a good, what's your relationship with her like now?
Well, she unfortunately has Alzheimer's and
oh my God.
Yeah. Wow. Assisted living now. She doesn't remember me anymore. So that's been really hard because it's like mourning, but they, you know, that they're still around, but they're not. It's a very strange place to be in.
That sounds, I mean, that's incomprehensible to me. And you're young, you're like 30 something or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So did you have to manage that whole thing on your own, getting her into an assisted living or whatever? Did you have to do all that?
It's complicated because for a long time I was trying or something, and it got very complicated because like the family had to get involved. It was just all like a lot of drama. And you know, it was just like, you know, oh, you say left, they say right. You say right, they say left. It was just very confusing. So luckily it did get taken care of. My cousins kind of stepped in to take over. I think they don't have a lot of faith in my abilities to be an adult. So they, you know, took over that whole thing, which was lucky because I kept saying, you know, this is a lot and, you know, it's hard for me to do this because it's very emotional. It's just was one of those, like, you're not doing it right. So luckily they stepped in and kind of, you know, took over. And I mean that in a good way and and also in a complicated way. I'm very grateful that they did all that, but it's caused a lot of animosity in the family. But I'm very grateful that they did it because I kept saying, like, look, I'm not, you know, I'll do this, but you know, it's very like difficult for me, you know.
So that must make it so much more difficult to process your relationship with her and what happened to you when you were younger. I mean, it sounds overwhelming to me. I can't imagine. That's so difficult.
It just is. It's very difficult. And luckily, I found, you know, a good therapist. My husband and I are also in therapy just because I was like, I can't, there's so much here. I need somebody to help me translate it for you. And that's where therapy always, I was always like, oh, everybody needs to be in this therapy. Like you have a kid, put him in kids therapy. You go to therapy. it's not so much, you know, we can't do these things. For me personally, it's like, it's the talking about it without hurting people's feelings or whatever, that's very difficult. That's why you need the outside person.
Right, because where your mother, the situation your mother's in now, I mean, people are bound to feel sorry for her.
And my family's very with me for reasons, you know, like it just gets so heated, it gets so emotional. And me personally, when I get flooded with emotions, that's another thing I work on, like sort of, I guess, what is it, like somatic balancing or whatever. When I get flooded, mm-hmm. I tend to shut down. So learning how to just be like, okay, everyone, shush, just deal with it, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you must feel, there's so many feelings that you must, like, there's part of you that probably feels disappointed. How do you even process that? Like, you feel disappointed, but yet there's no way. You're also dealing with it in real time in a whole other level, right? Do you go see her very often?
No, I can't. Like, my grandmother had Alzheimer's too, and I would have to go and visit at the hospital, and it was so traumatic. Like, that's one mm-hmm. reason I kept asking my family for more and more help, because I'm like, I can't, this is too, emotionally, it's too much.
So how are you dealing with that in a day-to-day kind of, like, how is this affecting you? I'm impressed how strong you are to have the life that you have, and we're talking about the very difficult part of your life, but in general, it seems pretty good. I mean, you know, you're a successful actress, you have a great husband. So, I give you a lot. It's, guys, this is really admirable. You know, I mean, this person didn't just, you know, a lot of people would have just folded into, a corner and hidden away. But so you're highly functional. We know that. But how do you cope with this? Or where does it really come up? Do you have girlfriends in your relationships? Or where is it really most difficult?
It kind of comes up every day. Honestly, the thing that I am realizing now is, God bless a lot of my girlfriends and a lot of my family too. It's something that maybe they struggle with, or it's such a new idea of this, like, no matter how much you give and how good you are, there is a chance that you can still neglect your child. And it brings up so much stuff in people. People get so defensive. People get very angry with me. And it's hard because I want to be like, oh, you know, I'm a human being. Yeah, I could be the bad guy here too sometimes. And that's when, because I just try not to judge my feelings. That's a thing I think one of my therapists is helping me with. Like, if I feel sad that day, I just have to go, I feel sad today.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's what we were saying in the beginning, right? This is a shit show time. Own it. It's fine. Yeah. And just
instead of it. I think one of the, you know, like, if I would tell my mom, like, oh, I'm feeling sad today, she'd just be like, well, just, like, you know, shake it off, take a walk, whatever. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to dwell on my emotions, but I still have to process them. And I think that, like, that was a big thing in my past, just going, oh, okay, yeah, you feel sad, but you just have to keep on going, you know? And a disconnect, because I think my mother and maybe even like other people in my family, they were just like, yeah, well, we feel the same way and we got over it. You just have to keep going. But like, there's like a new vocabulary about healing going, no, you don't have to keep going. You have to live it. You have to feel it. You have to let it like pass through you kind of. You can't just like, I always say it's like, you know, having food poisoning, you have to throw up, you know?
Right. That's a great analogy. I love that.
Yeah. You feel better once you do. So it's honestly, it's very hard because it's kind of doing a total 180 from things that were very comfortable for me and really going really, 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 really deep into, yes, this person may have had really good intentions and they didn't mean to, but they still fucked up. And if somebody like, well, they didn't, I'd be like, no, you don't get to tell me your opinion or what you think. This is my truth. I'm allowed to say that. You can't defend. I don't give a shit about your hangups about whatever. You got to put that aside, because if it is my space and I am telling you my truth, if that brings up a thing for you, I don't give a shit. That's your thing. No.
So it sounds like you're faced with a lot of criticism about your mom.
Oh,
Or talking about your mom, even talking. I mean, how can you not feel neglected by her when you're talking about her? So is the pushback you get mostly from family members then, or where is it coming from?
I can't even tell. Like, I feel like it's I don't know if it's something that I just see more, you know, like once you're eyes are open to a certain thing, you see it everywhere. So now it just could be like me. I'm kind of in a place where I'm like, okay, what is my perception and what is the reality? So like, I could say, oh yeah, you know, this one time when I got into a fight with my cousin, she could remember it. Like, I don't remember us fighting. I remember raised voices. You know what I mean? So like, it's part of that, like, I know, like, this is how it felt. This was my truth at the time. I felt like you were yelling at me.
Do you feel like some of that criticism internal? Like, do you feel like guilty about feeling, you know, angry or disappointed in your mom?
Yeah, it's very hard because for so long, I took the role of her caretaker emotionally. I wanted her to be happy. I wanted her to be healthy. I was just so worried about her all the time. Mm-hmm. And
was this before she got sick or before she showed symptoms of Alzheimer's?
After my dad died, I was like, now looking back, I think probably where my generalized anxiety came from. But I was like, oh my God, I only have one parent left. Where is she? Where is she? Where is she?
Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, like she would come home late. I'd be like, that's it. That's it. She's dead. You know, like, or she wouldn't tell me where she was, all that kind of stuff. And I would just like flip the fuck out. And I think that people thought that that was really sweet. They would be like, oh my God, they love each other so much. But now as I get older and I unpack things or I ask questions, there was just a lot of codependent enmeshment stuff that like, it didn't set me up well for a lot of things. And it's a very conscious effort to be working on those things because I don't want to, you know, fall into the old things that I've always known, even if they're not good for me.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like instead of taking care of yourself. I mean, that's, you know, you wound up focusing on looking out for her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
did
that was,
did she know that? Do you think she was aware of that? No.
No, I think like one of her defenses, I think, was to like my husband always tells this story. Like when he first met her, I think you know, are you sure you want to, you know, get with her? She's a lot. Ha 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 ha. It was like that gentle ribbing, you know, don't get too cocky, kid, that kind of thing. And, you know, you'd laugh about it. But now
I'm not clear on this. Your mother would say that to your then boyfriend?
Yes.
Now husband?
Yeah. He would say,
really? So yeah, your mother had a, I mean, it wasn't just, she was, you know, distant. It was also that she was critical of you, or?
I think she thought that it was helpful. I mean, I don't know. Like, it's a double-edged sword, because, like, it made me hyper aware of all of these things, but it also made me, very critical of myself, especially of myself. Yeah. You know, just a lot of pressure to be a certain way. And of course my looks were a very big currency for her. So
really,
I got a lot of feedback of, well, Marilena, you know, are you just going to be like a rich man's wife, or, you know, you're going to have to find a man to keep you in the style to which you're accustomed. And I would just be like, okay. And I think she thought that that was funny, but also those things, you remember those things more than some her saying, oh, you know, you're so capable, you're smart, you're this, you're that. It was just about, you know, my looks and stuff. I think she worried that I was dumb or something. So she thought, oh God, you know, God bless, but, you know, she's, we're going to have to work on the thing that she does have, which is her currency, her looks. So it was very,
wow.
big on keeping me like skinny. I mean, like, no, like she just worried about everything. If I didn't feel like eating what whomever had made, I had an eating disorder. If I, you know, it was just 0 to 10, it was just this anxiousness of what's wrong with you. And I was like, nothing's wrong with me. You just need to spend more time with me.
What a bad negative message. That's really like,
yeah,
really bad. And like the idea of feminism and that message, like, just totally clash. I mean, that's like horrible. That's so like 1950s.
Yes. And that was part of the, like, oh, this is old school parenting. And I would be like, yeah, well, it sucks. And she'd be like, lol, you don't know. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. She didn't take you seriously.
So, not at all.
I mean, we know you're attractive. So she kind of thought that was kind of like your way to, like, you know, your, you know, ace in the hole, or your way that you could get through life. Was she thinking that? Did she?
I don't know. I mean, sometimes I think that, sometimes I honestly could not tell you. It, like, you know, that was always a very big thing. You know, people, you know, sounds so whatever, but like, you know, constantly telling you, like, oh, you know, oh, your daughter's so pretty, like, oh, smile at them, whatever, and you do, and it's whatever, and that's one.
Oh, so that was something she could use, kind of like what you were saying about in school, that, you know, getting good grades was a reflection on them,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to just learning things and developing. Like, it sounds like she wasn't, you know, I mean, she wasn't approaching, you know, parenting from the point of view of like, who is this person? What are they naturally good at? What do they do? Blah, blah, blah. Like, what are their interests, how to develop them and stuff like that. It was more, it sounds, you know, more of a bit of, it sounds a bit narcissistic, a reflection of her, right?
Yeah.
Was your mom really, were looks important to her? Was she projecting? Did she worry about her own looks?
She did. I mean, she had certain things, you know, like would go and, you know, get her hair done every week and a manicure and pedicure every week. And I would go with her. But as she got older, but also it was like, it was just very confusing. A lot of mixed messages. It was always like, I had to stay very skinny, or I didn't have to stay. It would just be like, are you gaining weight? Are you gaining weight?
You're naturally thin, I'm guessing, right? I mean,
But that was like a huge, big deal in my family, because my adopted sister, everybody gave her such a hard time about her weight. Like, who cares? Like, they took it so personally, dared, but everybody in my family is kind of chubby. So it was like, you know, it was just like this whole thing about you can't get fat, but everybody in my family,
did it give you food or body issues? Do you have that now?
And I love to eat, but I definitely, you know, I go like, oh, I shouldn't, you know, like I made, you know, you're just like, oh, is this a good choice? Nah, nah, nah. But then you're just like, just fucking eat.
Yeah. Right. So, you know, I just want you guys, the people out there to know, like, this is a really great story of somebody who you know, on the surface seems like they have it all together and things are going, and things are going well for you, I believe, in general, but has, you know, kind of, I mean, they're not things that, they're not issues or obstacles or difficulties that seem obvious to other people, you know,
right.
Attract. And so I just want you guys to, like, this is a very difficult story. And Maria Elena is being very generous on sharing it with us. And I want you all to appreciate the what she's done to cope with all this and how she's continuing to cope with all this. And also, I like, you know, it is good to hear that therapy has had a positive impact on some people. And you're one of them because you have, you sound like you are interested in finding, you know, how to find a therapist, how to connect with the therapist that's right for you and stuff like
yeah.
that. But I want to know, like, as an actress, I think that, like, this has really probably been great fuel or great,
oh.
you know, because I can totally see how the presenting yourself and handling things and managing things and taking on other people's feelings and playing character, you know, taking on a character. And I want to hear about how your experience have really informed your, you know, performance work.
Yeah, sure. Well, it's funny because I was joking with my, probably with my therapist. Who else do I joke with? in all of the ways that I think there was so much worry about me, about, I don't know, whatever. All of that sort of stuff that was put on me has actually made me an artist. You know, it was like inescapable. And mm-hmm. Part of the big tragedy is if my mother, I think, had taken the time out to jump outside of her own head, maybe in her anxiety, to really get to know me, we would see how much we have in common in that way. Like, she raised me on, like, movies, on Hollywood glamour, and that was just like the thing, you know. I just saw it and I took it as a means of study, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And just all of the, especially with those older movies, the high drama and also mm-hmm. the high life made me this, like, incredibly sensitive person who I think for a long time I was so afraid of going to drama school, like a long-term drama school, because I can't be around actors for too long because we're so, and the,
you're so what? That cut out.
Oh, so needy. Just so, like, observation and validation and things
mm-hmm.
right, you know, and
mm-hmm.
taken advantage of. And I've also seen people who are just use that as an excuse to just be incredibly you know, overwhelmingly needy, and they need to be the focus. So my sensitivity definitely helps, and it helps mm-hmm. it to people and go, oh, you're a this type. Oh, you're a that type.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Really,
but I bet it also helps you kind of, like, put yourself away while you're being somebody else.
Sort of. I mean, I kind of think that's a little bit of a myth, because, like, you can
mm-hmm,
only
I don't,
yourself mm-hmm. with another person's, like, costume on, you know, like, I used to think that about acting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Total transformation, you know, all the way down to your DNA. But as I watch in movies and stuff, some of these really great actors, there's a comfort for me to know, oh, they're still playing themselves, but
mm-hmm.
it's that's the only person that could play that, you know, like
mm-hmm.
Mary, for example, she has her tells, she has her things that she does over and over and over again. I now
Meryl,
know.
Who are you talking about?
Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep. Right.
So, like, that was actually really in my sort of healing journey, when I was like, oh my God, I have to be perfect. I have to be better than da 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 da. Now I'm like, I can just be myself, but in my work, I can still be me, just with this other skin, I guess. You know, it's
mm-hmm.
not that earth shattering. You don't have to be a full genius every single time you step in front of the camera. Sometimes you can just be Marie Lena with a hat on. And maybe that's like, you know, I don't have to work as hard as I think I do.
And well, it sounds like you have so many different like emotional points of view though. You know what I mean? Also, like you kind of grew up with one emotional set, you know, or circumstance, and that has changed. And now you have a completely different set of emotional circumstances or relationship with your mother. And also, I think it's really, you know, I think it's worth noting that you don't have any siblings that you grew up with to, you know, share or get a reality check from. You don't really have anybody around to like say what to talk with about it, right? What really actually happened. Is that right?
Yeah. That was the thing that I talked about with my therapist and all, you know, that whole idea of found family is such a big thing for me now. You know, I always thought that I was best when I was part of a cast, you know. That's always been my dream. Whenever I've been at my happiest, I'm like, when have you been at your happiest? And it's like, when I'm on a cast, when I'm part of, not when I'm part of a crew, when I'm part of a cast and there's like crew and there's ever, and you're that little microcosm, that little universe, that little family. And that I love so much. It feels sometimes, it's that kind of thing that you don't get with blood family. I mean, some people, I don't always, where you be yourself and you can say, I don't like that. I do like that. That hurts my feelings.
You know, there's a great lesson in there because I did say, I think we're kind of post family now, especially when I'm storing, because we don't live near each other. We used to grow up near our families and we don't anymore. And I want you to tell us what your Instagram is and your IMBD so we can look you up. Go ahead.
Oh, my Instagram is Satin Worship, like Satan Worship, Satin. Satin.worship at Instagram. That's also my TikTok. I'm starting there. I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm trying. And you can find me, you can just Google search Marielena. Last name is Logsdon.
Wow. Thanks so much, Marie Elena. That was really intense. A lot to think about there. You were very generous in sharing, and I find it inspiring, and I bet all you guys will, you know. Whoa. Anyway, stick around this afternoon. We've got so much great programming. Right after this is Lost and Rewound with Elan Danziger. And tune in every Thursday, 2 to 3, for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. And go to my page on RadioFreeBrooklyn.com and check out, I have over 250 episodes on my homepage in the archives. And that will take you years. You can spend the rest of your life listening to me, okay? And get in touch at Dr. Lisa at RadioFreeBrooklyn.com. Thanks again. Have a great afternoon. Thank you.